You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Awards Blend, a weekly and live podcast on Cinema Blend that is dedicated to the ongoing Oscar race. Though over time, we have expanded the focus of Awards Blend to really include basically everything that's happening in the world of movies. And because of that, I cannot think of any better co-hosts than the gentleman that I am joined by each week. Although this week we may tear each other to pieces as we debate the best Steven Spielberg film. So, before we get into that, please say hello to Kevin McCarthy, the entertainment reporter for Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., and the official president of the Hoyt Van Hoytema Fan Club. Kevin, how are you?
True. No, honestly, I need to start that foundation, to be honest, Sean. I really do. And if you're just tuning in for this the first time, I'm Kevin McCarthy. I work out of Washington, D.C. at Fox 5. This is our 10th episode? Is this 10?
10, our baby turns 10 today.
Yeah,
I know.
And if you're just tuning in, please find us on iTunes. It's Awards Blend, and we have our past 9 episodes are available there as well.
So. Well, and the show would not be the same without Jake Hamilton, who is entertainment reporter for Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, say hello.
Hello. I'm just kind of amazed that you said you can't think of anyone better to, like, really, you can't think of anyone better to host this with?
No.
We're the
no
best.
One. Oprah, maybe. Maybe Oprah.
You should really expand your horizons.
Nah, well, we love having you with us, Jake. This is our last show. It's our last show, guys. Last Awards Blend before we have the actual Academy Awards ceremony. So we'll be making our picks today in the top categories. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, later we will be diving into a very heated conversation that we've been teasing all week on social. I gotta say, so we've been using this hashtag. First, it was hashtag Nolan Blend for the films of Christopher Nolan, the best films of Christopher Nolan. Then we used hashtag PTA Blend. But that they have nothing on this week where we used hashtag Spielberg Blend. And so many people got involved on social media. It was amazing to see people just debate on Twitter and Facebook about what films they would choose for the best.
And people are getting mean about it.
I will say we've been discussing this for a long time. Right. I just made my decision about 30 seconds ago. So I just emailed it to Gabe. I have had the hardest time with this decision. It's been very hard to choose his best movie. And again, that's the thing here. And Jake and I were discussing this earlier. There's a difference between favorite and best. I mean, you can have it. Favorite is an easier choice because it's personal to you. And but the definitive answer we're giving today is what we think is the best from an all-around standpoint. A Spielberg film, and it might not be your favorite. It could just be the best movie.
Yeah, mine are different. If we were doing favorite, it would be a different movie than what I have picked for his best.
Okay, we're going to get there in a second. So we are Awards Blend. We are a weekly and live podcast here on Cinema Blend. And like I said, we have to get into our picks before the Academy Awards. But we also do news as a roundup at the beginning of each show. And I think we have to start, guys, with the news about Kevin Smith, which Kevin Smith is a really important filmmaker to all three of us. We have really interesting stories that we want to share in a minute. But so he had a heart attack earlier this year. He was in the middle of performing these shows that he does. He goes around the country a lot, hosts these live Q&As where he gets up and tells stories and has great audience feedback, interaction with people who shoot him questions. And after his first show over the evening, he felt chest pain, decided he had to go get himself checked out. And it turns out he was about to have or had a massive heart attack if he didn't go to the doctor right away. He says on social media that he would have died. Tell me what you guys thought when you first heard this news that Kevin was, so close to death's door.
Go ahead, Jake.
No, I was going to say, I saw, unfortunately, a poorly written headline, and I won't say who it was by. But the headline only said Kevin Smith suffers massive heart attack. An appropriate headline should have been Kevin Smith survives massive heart attack, because so there was a few minutes when I honestly thought that he had died. And yeah, I think, you know, he is, well, I mean, when I think when we think of someone like a Spielberg or a Scorsese or a Nolan, there's a distance to them. There's a distance to their greatness. But there's something about Kevin Smith that he almost feels like a buddy. Like he almost feels like he, you know, for so many reasons, he would fit into this podcast. Not because we would be talking to him as a director, but I feel like we would instantly start talking to him as friends. I mean, he, like, his first movie was written about guys that do what we're doing right now, which is just hang out and shoot the bull about, you know, about movies. So, yeah, there was a moment in that where I, you know, it really felt like a big loss, because it felt like we had lost him for a second. I know that he's been making some drastic health changes. I think he lost like 90 pounds. But apparently what he says that this is a problem that was, in the making long before he really started changing his health. I know he's been going to make some lifestyle changes, but, hopefully, lifestyle changes are really the only thing he changes about himself, because I consider him to be one of the greats in the business.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, growing up, Smith was a very special director to me, because, Mallrats was just a film that I absolutely adored. I can quote every line from that film. Chocolate covered pretzels, one of my favorite bits of all time. I remember interviewing Michael Rooker for Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and randomly bringing that up, which I'm sure nobody else has ever done that with him in a Guardians interview.
First time.
I mean, I'm joking, but like, it was honestly, it was, to me, Mallrats was so quintessential to growing up for me. I was a big fan of music. I'm a big music fan, so I remember getting the soundtrack before the movie, before I even knew what the movie was. I remember Silverchair being on there, and I was like really excited about it. And then I kind of found the movie through the soundtrack. I went back and watched Clerks 1, and I became an instant fan. I snuck into Dogma before I was 17. I have very big memories of that. I remember recording. Back in the day, my parents wouldn't let me get HBO, so I had to record, or HBO or Showtime or Cinemax, whichever one it was, Mallrats was playing on there, and I was too young, I guess, to see it at the time, so I recorded it onto my VCR, that and like Face Off and Seven and whatever movies were on there, and I would watch Mallrats on a loop. And to me, he's just a fan of movies, and every Star Wars reference, and it made me so happy that he got to play a stormtrooper in Force Awakens, and I was just like so excited about it.
Like, did he really?
Yeah, wasn't, yeah, he was a stormtrooper in Force Awakens. So I just
voice.
Always,
he's a voice at least. I don't know if he like got into the suit.
Maybe I thought maybe it is a voice. But he's in the movie somehow.
Yeah.
Some way, shape, or form. But to me, like, that was like a culmination to me of like almost his career, because if you watch Clerks, I mean, Clerks is a massive Star Wars dialogue, everything going up to that, even the beginning of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I still think the greatest thing he's ever written is the Good Will Hunting 2 hunting season scene with Matt Damon and
applesauce.
Affleck. Yeah, I mean, God, Gus Van Sant counting his money, and then the applesauce and the gun going off.
I'm busy. Jesus, Ben, I'm busy.
It's literally one of my favorite scenes ever. So it was a huge thing for me to see that happen, considering, like Jake said, you almost consider him to be a friend. I mean, I've interacted with him multiple times throughout the years. I've seen him live. He did a Q&A after Red State. I interviewed him for an hour for Red State. He just loves talking movies, and that's why I love Kevin Smith.
And that's why I think his bigger impact, because we have to all admit his movies as of late are not good. His bigger impact on
Red
this
State
industry
was awesome.
Red State was
amazing.
Yeah, but Yoga Hosers is terrible, and
but
pretty much everything he's been, Tusk is really bad.
I would defend the first half of Tusk.
Tusk is bad.
I think the first half of Tusk is brilliant.
I would argue that what he did...
Brilliant?
Brilliant. I would say the first half of Tusk is some of the best writing of his career.
I know we got to move on, but let me say one thing about Kevin Smith. So growing up, Kevin Smith was that Jay and Silent Bob type of humor. I mean, Chasing Amy was a bit of a derailment. It was more a little more serious, but also comedy at the same time. But Red State to me was like, oh my God, that showed this incredible range that he has as a filmmaker. Michael Parks in that film is so incredibly good.
I'd agree with you.
I just find that really kind of proved the range. Yoga Hausers, I actually haven't seen Yoga Hausers. I want to, I will eventually. But I don't think he's been making bad films.
It's actually genuine.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen it, so.
So I want to tell my Kevin Smith story really fast. We've all had stories with Kevin over the years. But this made me really happy. he was hosting a screening of Red State at his house. He actually said on something on Twitter of, I want to invite a group of critics to come see this new movie. I'm really proud of it. If you can convince me that you should come, then, you know, on social media, then I'll get in touch with you and you can be one of the ones who come see it. And this the first thought that came to my mind was the scene in Jay and Silent Bob where they go to visit every person who says something negative about films and they beat the shit out of them. And I responded. I said, guys, I've seen Jay and Silent Bob. This is a trap. Like, do not try to go to this. He wants to jump all of us. And I got a direct message from him and said, that made me laugh really hard. You're in. And
love
I was like, that's awesome.
Oh,
but unfortunately, it was happening like the next day, and it was primarily for like LA critics, and I'm here in Charlotte, and I just wasn't able to pull it off. But
no, Sean, I don't think it ever happened. I was in that same boat you were. I got invited to go to his house for Red State. I think something happened, and I don't think the screening ever happened with the critics in his house. I could be wrong, unless we're talking about two different stories, but it was for Red State, and then the house thing just didn't go through. Something happened. I can't remember what it was, but I was also
Kevin
invited.
Kevin was probably stoned out of his mind, and he came out of it, and someone said, you just invited a bunch of critics to your house to watch your movie, and he was like, wait, I don't want to do that. No, that's not true.
Oh, yeah, anyway, sure. I too love my story of being invited to Kevin's house. That was fun that I also was invited to Kevin Smith's house.
Sorry, Jake, I'm sorry.
I also share that experience.
We are glad that Kevin is feeling better. Breaking news right before we started the podcast.
Yeah.
This is really important also. People who bought tickets to go see Avengers Infinity War on May 4th, you're going to get to see it earlier than anticipated.
You done messed up. Well, no, because they're going to see it late.
Yeah, I guess you're going to see it late. Well, so now April 27th, Avengers is moving a week earlier, and we were sort of spitballing why we think that happened. There's a huge vacuum to film in April. There's nothing really opening. I think Rampage is opening in the middle of the month, the Dwayne Johnson movie. And then... also, we think it wants to get out of the way of Solo or give itself some room to breathe before it
To me, that's what it is. Like, those are two massive movies, and I would argue that the second movie Disney is probably more worried about than the first. Like, they not that they need to be worried about a Star Wars movie, but I think they wouldn't mind spacing apart two behemoths. Even 7 days could make all the difference.
It helps Deadpool too. Deadpool's in the middle of those two films.
Yeah,
and now,
that's true.
Hopefully the audience will be tailing off a little bit for Infinity War.
Here's the question, and I think our friend Eric was the one who posted this on Facebook or somebody or on Twitter somewhere. Will Infinity War open as big as Black Panther? And I thought that was an interesting question because Black Panther obviously had an enormous opening. It was what did it best Avengers 1? It did, or was it right underneath it? For three day. I think it was 201 for 3 day, and Avengers 1 was 207, I think, or something like that.
I think so, yes.
So, but Civil War did not open in the 200s, and that was essentially an Avengers-type movie directed by the Russo brothers. It featured Black Panther. It also had Spider-Man's introduction, and that film couldn't even break the 200, which is obviously a very hard thing to do, and I'm not knocking
Black
Civil War.
Black Panther is going to cross $1 billion.
Oh, no question. I don't even know why that's even been a question.
It's insane. It's just insane. And I say this from this perspective on the spectrum of Marvel superheroes, Black Panther is like a third tier superhero. Like, he's not Captain America. He's not Iron Man. He's not Spider-Man. He doesn't have that household name. That movie is solid, and it's playing into a cultural aspect that people are responding to. Also, they made a great movie that really helps. But I made a joke that like, in the Justice League's grand scheme of things, it would be like if Cyborg had his solo movie and it broke $1 billion. Wonder Woman, it's not Superman, it's not Batman. It's this third tier hero who's just dominating, and it's great to see.
But the movie was bigger than Black Panther. It was like it was like this very strange moment, this historical element that happened. And he's not even the best character in the film, which is even another thing I find interesting. To me, when you're watching this movie, it's the women in the film, it's the Michael B. Jordan character, it's Shuri, it's Danai Gurira's character, it's Lupita Nyong'o's character, it's Andy Serkis's character. Honestly, Black Panther in the film, who's great, holds the whole thing together, he's very understated. He is not the best character or the most talked about character in that movie, in my opinion.
Right.
And now Chadwick Boseman is coming out and saying that T'Challa is actually the villain in the movie, which is an interesting perspective.
What? He said that?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah, he in a recent interview, the idea being that he's the one that's kind of really in charge of keeping Wakanda separate from everyone else. I forget the exact bullet points he used.
That's a good debate. That is a good debate about whether Wakanda should open up his borders to everybody else. And if he thinks that T'Challa is the one trying to keep Wakanda safe and secret, I understand what he's saying. You can't call him a villain.
Well, that all goes back to the Michael B. Jordan idea about him not being, him being a sympathetic villain and him not really, you know, Michael B. Jordan's character at the end of the film, the Wakandans use his ideals and they actually break the border. They go into the neighborhood in Oakland. They open up that Wakanda scientific center that's going to be in the middle of Oakland. So again, with Michael B. Jordan, which was why I love his character and love the performance of Michael that he did in the movie. He's a sympathetic villain. So I can see kind of where that argument comes in, but you know, a murderer, one's not. So
do you guys think that Infinity War, let's go through it. Will Infinity War open smaller than Black Panther?
Yes.
My dog's tail is moving. I'm going to say, yeah, I think Infinity War opens smaller than Black Panther.
I think Infinity War has a...
I don't think it's possible.
Has a 185, 190 weekend. I don't feel the buzz I felt for Black Panther.
I don't think the average person gets the significance of Infinity War. I mean, at this point, I think... I don't want to say that, like, we've grown jaded to the idea of the Avengers and or even something like a Justice League having everyone together. Right. But I remember, you know, I told you guys last week I'm making my way through the MCU right now. Last night I watched Captain America: First Avenger, and tonight I'll be watching the Avengers. And I just remember how just freaking monumental that movie was. The idea that all of these people are going to be together in a movie.
Right, now
I feel like, and like I said, not that people aren't excited for it, but there's just that idea of like, oh, it's another Avengers movie.
Yeah, and the idea that there are groups that got together specifically to go as like a big group to go see Black Panther, like that won't happen for Infinity War. That's what we're thinking.
Listen, I think that's the exact reason. Black Panther, as I mentioned, was bigger than the movie. It was bigger than the character. It was bigger than everything. It was a moment. So I think Infinity War, as Jake said, Listen, it's going to make a ton of money. We all know that. It's going to make over $1 billion, no question. Didn't Avengers 1 make over $2 billion or close to it? I could be wrong on that number. Don't quote me. 1.5, I think, is what it did. $1.5 billion. But all I can say is I don't feel the urgency or the buzz that I felt for Black Panther for Avengers Infinity War.
It's still a couple of months to go.
It's going to be next month. Next month.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, I guess that's true now at this point. Since it's March and it opens at the end of April. All right, that's fine. Okay, so we have the Academy Awards on Sunday, and we are called Awards Blend for now, although I guess we can sort of reveal that we are going to rebrand after the Oscars. And we're not going to tell you yet what the name is, because Jake, we're going to have one more big Awards Blend show, which will be the Monday after the Academy Awards. And then we will start to talk about what the new show is going to be called and the direction that we want to go in it. But we will be keeping the three of us together and discussing all things cinema. So the Academy Awards, we're going to get to our picks. We're going to go on the record after discussing all of the categories in all of our past episodes, which, as Kevin pointed out at the beginning of the show, and I want to keep emphasizing, you can find us on iTunes. We are now on Spotify, which I'm really happy about, and we are free. You can go back and go through all of our past I got a really nice that tweet from someone who said they just discovered us a couple days ago, and they've listened to like nothing but us ever since, which I think is masochistic.
That's very cool.
But really cool. Yeah, I think that's really, really nice. And so one point that I want to bring up that was raised by one of my colleagues, Kelly West, who wanted us to emphasize for everybody, and she's totally right. This is like one of the first times that all of the Best Picture nominees are available on digital to stream, all except for The Post and Shape of Water. Phantom Thread, right. Those are the two that are still in theaters and open up later. But you can basically
Shape of Water is the 13th. Well, I, Tonya is not Best Picture.
Right. But that they're going to have their digital release on Friday, tomorrow, I believe, in order to make it in time for the ceremony. But you can essentially catch up on any of the films that you have not caught up with to this point this weekend before going into the ceremony on Sunday. On a scale of 1 to 10, excitement level heading into the Academy Awards, whether it be for Jimmy Kimmel as the host or just some surprises that may come. Kevin, where are you on a 1 to 10? 10 being, I cannot wait for this show to start.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I over the years, and if you follow my Twitter at all, I've been very vocal about my distaste for the choices the Academy makes for nominations and winners throughout the year. We've had so many shows about what films should have won, what films did they do all wrong. But that being said, it's my Super Bowl. I look forward to it every single year. My wife and I dress up in a tux and a gown in our basement, and we watch the show together with our dog Oscar, which is named after the Academy Awards. So it's kind of an event that I just, no matter how I feel about the choices they make as a group, I just can't wait to see the spectacle of it. I love watching the E-Red carpet stuff. I'll sit there for 3 hours prior to the show, watch all the interviews on the carpet with, you know, Seacrest and Juliana Rancic and all that. And I just, to me, I don't know, it's a big event. I feel that way about it as somebody who maybe was a Patriots fan who watched the Super Bowl this year. You know what I mean? It's a big deal. So going into it, though, this year I'm a little more excited because of the fact that the Best Picture front runners are the two films that we all know about were Three Billboards and Shape of Water. But I have this crazy feeling about Get Out that I'm kind of just kind of in my stomach, kind of like waiting until Sunday night to see what happens and see that movie gets called out for Best Picture. But yeah, I mean, listen, I'm just excited to hear the word Dunkirk over and over again. I mean, it's been nominated for, I believe, 8 Academy Awards. I'm excited to see, hopefully, if it wins anything below the line, as Jake says. I mean, I'm just excited to see Nolan's name called when they say Best Director and they go to his face. I'm just excited about that. I'm excited to see Paul Thomas. I mean, the Best Director category is one of the best lineups I've seen in a long time. And I just can't wait to see the cutaways to Nolan's face or Paul Thomas Anderson's face. I'm just excited about, I mean, my top two favorite films of the year are nominated for Best Picture and Best Director and a lot of awards. So it's an exciting night to me to see two films that I really, really enjoyed with a ton of nominations. So
Jake, where are you at? 1 to 10.
I think it gets an automatic 7 from me just because I agree with Kevin in that, like, it is our Super Bowl. But like this year, I was excited to watch the Super Bowl, but less excited because I couldn't care less about the two teams that were playing.
Yeah.
I am a big fan of Three Billboards. You guys know I was less of a fan of Shape of Water. Would love if Get Out could pull a win for so many reasons, not the least of which is what it would say about the Academy and the direction that the Academy is going. That being said, I don't know. I know we're going to talk predictions later, but you know, one of the stats that I saw was that no film has won Best Picture with less than 5 nominations since 1939 or 36. Yeah, I don't call me on one of those two, which doesn't bode well for Get Out, which only has 4 nominations. It's a solid 7 for me. One thing I don't want is 10,000 jokes about the mix-up last year. Like, obviously, Kimmel has to play into it, but like, I'm kind of sick of that story by now.
I think Kimmel knows that. There's no way they're going to do that over and over. They might make one reference to it, maybe.
On our Facebook feed, I just want to bring this point up. Suzanne Wilson says, just so you know, I don't watch award shows anymore due to the political bias. And I find that comment is raised by a lot of people who are like, oh, I just don't want to watch because they politicize everything. But I kind of feel
that's nothing new.
Yeah, but this year in particular, because there are so many political topics that people can bring up, I found that most of the shows are staying away from it. Like, it doesn't seem like we're getting beaten over the head with political opinions at these shows. But maybe everyone's saving it for the Oscars. And maybe I'm missing the boat. I don't see the Me Too movement or this push for diversity as something that's political, overly political. It just seems like people are sort of assessing the state of the industry right now and realizing that we have to make some changes, but that doesn't strike me as being overly political.
I think I disagree with you. I think I have felt a little bit more this year than in past years, especially in the speeches and and the fact that it hasn't changed in the entire way that people dress on the red carpet. I feel like it's a little bit more prevalent. I mean, Kevin, you mentioned Ryan Seacrest. There's a very good chance that no one's going to stop for Ryan Seacrest on the red carpet on Sunday because of the allegations against him. Like, we're talking about the guy who was the go-to interviewer on the Oscars red carpet could be bypassed by every major name that walks the red carpet outside of, not Kodak, Dolby Theater. So I do disagree with you a little bit, Sean. I do think that that this year in particular is fairly politicized.
I guess I mean like Trump jokes. Maybe I'm openly saying it. Yeah. It's not like open pot shots at our president.
I agree. Yeah, that I agree with. And I think that's because the Me Too movement has taken the place of that.
You know, I'll say one thing. In regards to the Seacrest thing, I agree with you, Jake. I'm interested to watch to see what happens on Sunday night. When I mentioned watching red carpet, it's just in my mind. When you think of red carpet, you think of Seacrest and Rancic automatically. But yeah, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting is whether or not the stars go to him. I read an article today that they're like having crisis meetings at E about, you know, trying to pick stars that can come to him that won't be awkward with. I read the whole article on Hollywood Reporter. Politics and Me Too are two things that I find interesting, especially in the Oscar element. I am very much an advocate of kind of celebrating the movies and enjoying the evening and talking about the successes of what these films did and what these filmmakers did and what these actors did and composers and cinematographers. My hope, personally, I think the Me Too element of it definitely needs to be a part of the show, but it can be a part, but it doesn't have to be the entire show. But I do think that it needs to be a part of the show. It's very, very important. In regards to politics, I'm just kind of hoping they stay away from politics. I just think it's just too easy to go political. Yeah. Now, when I mean political, I mean Trump jokes specifically, yeah, or jokes about like Steve Bannon, whatever they're going to go, wherever he'll go. I have no idea what he's going to do. And I'm not stating my politics here at all. I just kind of want to hear from the filmmakers about their films. Now, the Me Too thing is different. I think it's a totally different category than Trump jokes and things like that. The Me Too thing is a very important matter, and I have no problem with that being brought up in speeches or talked about throughout the night. My hope is that the entirety of the night is more about the celebration of the films versus the politics. That's
Here's an issue.
Thought.
The films in contention are weird. I went on my NBC affiliate in Charlotte this morning, and I made my picks. And so I'll leak that, you know, before we get the best picture, that I picked Shape of Water, right? So I'm driving home, and I got a phone call from my mom, who is 80 and is, you know, casually pays attention to what's happening in the film world. And she's like, "So what is Shape of Water? What is it about?" And I started to describe it to her, and she was like, "All right, it's just I'm never going to see that, and I don't want to know what it is." So the general audience might just not be tuning into the Oscar ceremony because they just don't know the films and they're not dialed into it. So,
politics plays an interesting element. I mean, like when shows get political, that part of the country, that part of the political spectrum, will tune out. So I think it's become an interesting debate of, and this is a thing we can talk about another time on the show, about politics and Hollywood. It's one of those things where, you know, people just want to go to the movies, but then again, these performers and these actors have a platform, so it is important for them to speak out and give their thoughts. So it's one of those things where I feel like there has to be a balance, because to me, I want to celebrate the movies and not politics.
But also, it is, I'd argue it is their moment. Like, they've earned it. Like, if they want, if you know, they sure worked to get 60 seconds on the stage. And if they want to, you know, you spend that 60 seconds burping the alphabet, that's their right. That's what they've earned.
Someone,
you know,
do like, that.
That's funny, though.
DiCaprio used his I thought DiCaprio had a great speech because he talked about the production of The Revenant and then shifted that into climate change, which was a perfect transition, because
that was a good speech.
You know, yeah, because correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they have to move production of The Revenant because the snow was melting?
Yeah.
Right? And so he brought that up in his speech, and obviously we all know that DiCaprio is very much an advocate for you know, climate change. And so I think if it could be done in such a way,
in a balance,
that you know, yeah.
Right. Like DiCaprio's speech was great because it was it focused on the film, but then it went into something he was passionate about. And I'm totally cool with that, because it's something that he clearly was passionate about. So that's just kind of my hope. I first off want to celebrate the movies. That's just me. But I understand that there's a lot going on in this country, and that I understand that movies aren't important in regards to the scheme of the things that are happening in this country. But movies are my personal favorite thing. I think a lot of people who watch the Oscars love movies. So if they can find a balance where they can still talk about the films and they want to get a little political it's fine. I just don't want the whole night to be Trump jokes. You know what I mean? I just feel like it's overplayed.
Quick sidebar, and then we'll get to our picks. DiCaprio and Brad Pitt are going to be the co-stars in the new Tarantino movie.
Yeah, they are. And that's then I read somewhere that, the rumor is Walton Goggins as Manson.
Oh!
Who would be perfect.
Shut up!
You want to know what
I read? Just want to
know what's funny? Oh my God. I'm so happy you said that. I just interviewed Walton Goggins on
for Tomb Raider
Saturday or something. I don't remember what day it was.
Yeah.
For Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And when I got up, this was the weirdest reaction ever. I'm trying to remember his exact words. But I said, we were talking about Hateful Eight and Django. And I remember like getting up out of the interview and saying to him, oh man, I can't wait to see you work with Tarantino again. Have you heard about this Manson movie he's doing? He goes, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Or I don't know what that is. Like it was a very strange reaction to, I wasn't even saying he was in the movie,
but he
reacted as
like,
if I was,
oh, like he was ready like, to shut you down.
Right. And I'm like, dude, I was just saying I'd be cool if you were in it.
He would be perfect for Manson.
When I left that room, my mind was, he's Manson. No question. That
interesting.
I will guarantee you that is the 100% cast.
I'd also argue, guarantee like, how big of a role it. Is Manson going? You know, I know we're
probably
getting to a way sidebar, but, like, Manson wasn't there for the Sharon Tate murders. So, like, right. and Tarantino has said specifically that it's not going to be a Manson movie.
Right.
And it's about, and if and if DiCaprio and Brad Pitt are playing the neighbors to Sharon Tate, like, I'm just having a hard time understanding how big of a role Manson's actually going to be playing.
I mean, Goggins has always been a very good supporting actor in the recent Tarantino films. I think it'll be a memorable moment. But I'm telling you right now, the way he reacted to me was as if he couldn't talk about something that I wasn't even asking him about. It was very strange. It was very defensive. And I was like,
okay,
you're Manson, aren't you? I didn't say that. But, yeah, I was like,
that is a topic for another podcast, because that's some great casting right there. That can be amazing. All right, let's run through the top picks. We are going to go on the record. We won't discuss it in depth because we kind of have rehashed all these categories, but let's go right to Best Actress, and we'll go around the horn, and you guys can tell me who your pick is so that we are on the record, that we can point and laugh at each other on Monday
when
we're either right or wrong. Jake, who do you think for Best Actress?
It's got to be Frances. I think she's just got a groundswelling of support. I that's who I'm going with.
Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lock. I've been saying that for the entire Awards Blend podcast. I mean, the four acting categories are 100% locked in. Frances is going to win, no question. The only person I could see upsetting her would be Margot Robbie for I, Tanya.
You think so?
That's the only thing I can think of. I mean, like when
not,
I do my...
Not Sally Hawkins?
No. No. When I do
see,
my...
I would argue Margot Robbie maybe has the... Like, I would put her maybe fourth or fifth if I had to rank people by their chances.
When I do my predictions in the air, which I'm doing tomorrow, I always do a will win, should win for the categories, and I think Frances is 100% the will and the should of these five women. I mean, her performance is incredible. I want to watch her dropped into every movie ever. Like, she is, like, the character is incredible. It's really layered.
And she's great at award shows.
Yeah,
I love her speeches.
I can't wait to see her speech. Yeah, that's what I'm excited about. Yeah. But we did argue that earlier in the year at the SAG Award, when she made the joke about using her SAG statue as a doorstop, which kind of meant that she didn't really care about this type of stuff. That was a question of whether or not that would affect her win
but
at the Oscars.
To me, like, that didn't really, I mean, I know we were talking about that, but to me, like, that never really gained traction the way I think it would have to in order for it to derail her.
No, I don't think so either. It was just an interesting tidbit that we were discussing.
All right. I think it's Frances also. I don't necessarily support it, but I think it's Frances.
But out of the five, who's better than her?
I like Sally Hawkins more, and I'd like to see her win. I thought she was great. Best actor, I'll say Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman.
Oldman will, Kaluuya should.
Kaluuya should. I have come around to the notion that Gary Oldman's performance, while really, really good, is aided with makeup and prosthetics in a way that we've discussed 100% at length on the podcast. I don't. It's a hard way to determine the difference between where the performance begins and the assistance from the makeup ends. And
that's a great question, because the best example of someone who I thought that beautifully used the makeup and the effects was Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln. I mean, because while he was obviously made up a certain way, it was still him, and he became him completely, and he deserved the award. But with Churchill, You're right. You can't see Gary Oldman at all physically whatsoever. He looks completely different. It's also not his best performance. We've discussed this many times.
But he is not up against his other performances.
I know. But even he's not even the best out of the five. But we all know that he is going to win for his career and not for this performance. We all know that.
I genuinely think it's the best performance out of the five.
Oh no, I think Daniel Day-Lewis.
Better
who else
than
is
Daniel
nominated?
Kaluuya? Daniel Kaluuya.
He's not better than Kaluuya. He's not better than Day-Lewis. Who else is up there? With the two, who else is up nominated for the best actor?
Denzel Washington.
He's better than Denzel. Okay.
And I'm blanking on the fifth. Why am I blanking on the fifth?
I don't know who the fifth one is off the top of my
looking,
head.
I'm looking.
So, in my opinion, Oldman is maybe third or fourth best.
Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, he's better than Timothy Chalamet. So he's the third best out of the five. So, I mean, to me, and I've said this a million times, Oldman deserve nominations for Professional and Fifth Element, Dracula, even Immortal Beloved was a typical Oscar type of performance.
But Jake's right. Jake's right. He's not competing with his old performances. That's the point.
He's going to win because of his career, not because of his performance. We all know that.
Probably. Yeah. All right. Best director. This is where I think it gets kind of interesting. This is where I think.
Really?
This is where I think this is set.
No,
but this is where I think that if the evening is starting to shift in a way that we don't expect. Early on, if you start to see, let's say you see a number of early wins for Get Out, do you start to feel Jordan has a chance?
But there won't be early wins for Get Out because all the major awards that Get Out's nominated for are End of the Night awards.
Late in the evening.
And okay, going back to what you said, Jake, earlier about an Academy Award movie not winning Best Picture without a certain number of nominations since 1939.
Yeah, I think it was like 1939. No movie had won Best Picture without at least being nominated for five awards.
But the awards that Get Out is nominated for are major awards. Like it's not just below the line stuff.
And I know
like major stuff.
I know, but so. But I think the argument being that like it has to be appreciated both in the craft, which is, you know, what some people might consider below the line nominations,
right?
And then the major stuff as well.
No,
the fact
you're right.
That, you know, it didn't get a score or. Or cinematography, or it didn't get any of those.
I'll still never understand how a movie wins Best Picture without winning Best Director. I just don't understand that. And the movie that I think is going to win, I mean, even though I'm not predicting it, which I'll get to in a little bit, the director wasn't even nominated for Best Director. So I think that that's a problem. That's a big problem. Like you're saying, the movie's the best movie of the year, but the person who directed the film, which is the person who made the movie, you're saying, is not worthy of a director nomination. That's ridiculous.
I mean, but that's happened before. Like,
but it's
Argo
ridiculous,
won Best
though.
Picture, yeah.
But Argo only won Best Picture because of the whole, they all felt bad that he didn't get Best Director nomination. That movie was not the best movie of the year. It was, that vote was, we feel so bad for Affleck that he didn't get nominated, so we're going to give it to Argo. It was a good movie, but it wasn't mind-blowingly
I think it was number four on my top 10, though.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, it's all politics. That's the thing. That's the problem with these award shows, that everything is political. Everything's weighted. Everything's like, oh, he hasn't won before, and now he's finally going to win. Just give it to the best movie or performer or director of the year. And that's Christopher Nolan. But
director, Kevin, who's going to win?
Del Toro. I mean, no question. I mean, he won the DGA. I mean, it's his year. I mean, everyone loves his speeches, as Jake has been saying. And I love Shape of Water. It was my number five of the year. Phantom Thread took over the four spot after I saw it, but I don't understand why that would win Best Director. I mean, I get that it's a beautiful looking film. It didn't emotionally blow my mind, but he's going to win, no question. He won the DGA. That's one of the biggest predictors you can think of. He won the Golden Globe for Best Director.
It is the biggest predictor, actually.
Yeah,
it's the biggest predictor.
I mean, listen, and my should win, as you all know, is Nolan. I mean, like, I would actually even be happy if Paul Thomas Anderson won. I'd be so ecstatic. Or Jordan Peele. My God, that'd be amazing. I just don't. I don't know. I'm more on the Nolan train, in my opinion. So,
Jake.
Yeah, I think Del Toro wins. You know, talking to people around Chicago and in the newsroom, the one general consensus I can get about Shape of Water is whether you like the movie or not, everyone agrees that it's well made. And I think because the movie, like, you know, no, I don't think anyone like is super opinionated one way or the other about it. It's just like, oh yeah, like that was a well made movie. I know too many people that viciously, for every person I know that loves how Dunkirk was made, I think I know too many other people that viciously dislike how Dunkirk was made, and I think that that it hurts. And Kevin, I agree with you. I think Nolan should win in terms of best directing, best like what it took to make that movie. I think Nolan should absolutely win for Dunkirk. But I think Shape of Water is sort of the easier, like, oh yeah, that was a well made film. Like no one's gonna disagree that Shape of Water was, as opposed to, I think I could find a few people that would disagree about how Nolan made Dunkirk.
And one thing we were discussing on our text chain was these brutally honest Oscar voters. Which I hate as well. I mean, like Jake, as you mentioned, they need to come out and say who they are if you're going to give an opinion like that. And one of the voters essentially said that Nolan failed with Dunkirk because it was too confusing, or he didn't get it or whatever. And to me, I just found that to be one of the most ignorant comments ever. And like to say to someone, I didn't get the film, and that he failed is just pure ignorance. Because a filmmaker challenges you and makes you work during a movie a little bit, mentally speaking, that means he failed, or he didn't deliver the typical war tropes where you're meeting with a person in the beginning, you find out who they are back home, their loved ones, and then you care when they die. Sure, typical way a war film is made, and it's been made like that for years. Amazing. But Dunkirk was just dropping you into a third act of a war film, and it challenged the viewer, and it put them in the immersion, and immersed you, and it was a masterclass and an exercise of immersion. So I that blew my mind that someone actually would even state that. I mean, if you don't like Dunkirk, that's fine, but just to say you don't get it and that means he failed, that's just ridiculous.
I also think those anonymous ballot voter articles, they're bogus for so many different reasons, but I don't trust what anybody says in them. I think that they could honestly just be saying whatever they want to say for shock value, because they know that their name's not attributed to it, and they know it's going to be good copy. Become such a pattern, every year all the trades have to run these anonymous ballot guys, and I think some of them just say stuff to be shocking now. I don't know if they even believe anything that they say in it because they don't put their name on it.
One thing I want to say about Nolan real fast, and just kind of filmmakers like the people who are nominated for Best Director, we all know the importance of getting butts in the seats, like people going to an actual cinema to see a movie. My favorite thing of 2017 were Harry Styles fans seeking out 70mm IMAX theaters just because they thought it was the best way to watch Dunkirk. And these are 13, 14, 15-year-old kids who are obsessed with Harry Styles that were put into a movie theater and experiencing a 70mm IMAX film for the first time in their lives. And I just think that, to me, that's the beauty of movies. Like someone who's preserving the cinematic experience and forcing people to see a film in a certain format and teaching them how to immerse themselves and get off their phones and stop watching movies on their iPhones and their iPads. I mean, I'm guilty of that. I watched Mute on my phone the other day on an airplane, but that was just my only way of watching it at the moment. It's on Netflix. But, with Dunkirk, I just think that with the $500 million it made at the box office worldwide, it put people into an experience that they never had before, and I hope that that gets more people to go to the movie theaters. That's why I was so excited about Black Panther, because the theaters just seemed dead for a long time, and just kind of having people talk about a movie so excitedly, going to see it three or four or five times. I just love that. I love that type of experience. So
my pick for director is Del Toro, for the record. Although I think the love for that is fading. I this is where I start to feel like I would not be surprised if you hear a name like Jordan Peele pop up. And
so who, really?
Yep, who beats him if someone beats him? Is it Jordan Peele?
Yeah.
Okay.
If someone beats Del Toro, I think it's Jordan Peele. I think it's because I think people, if there's a wave, it gets behind Get Out and it pushes it through. Agreed. I'd be stunned if it happened, but I just think that maybe Shape of Water peaked early. However,
we live in a reality where that could happen. It's not, it's not like, I really don't think we live in a reality where we're going to hear Greta Gerwig's name, but I do very much think we live in a reality in which Jordan Peele's name could be written, on the card inside that envelope.
Any chance we hear Nolan's name?
No. I don't think so. So best picture, I'm sticking with Shape of Water. And the reason I'm sticking with Shape of Water is solely off the Producers Guild. When we get to March Madness and the basketball picks and the giant bracket, everybody says don't pick chalk, right? Like don't pick ones over fives and don't pick the higher seed over the lower seed. It's just not a smart idea because games are played in certain ways and anybody could win. But I think chalk in an Oscar pool makes sense because you spot these trends, and something like Directors Guild is huge for Del Toro, and something like Producers Guild is just massive for Shape of Water. And the fact that Three Billboards, One Screen Actors Guild gives me pause, but I'm going to put my money behind Shape of Water and still say that at the end of the night, it's going to, I think the last year's Moonlight shock over La La Land was the anomaly. And more often than not, the Producers Guild person lines up and that person wins, and the shock doesn't happen that often.
All right.
Jake, where are you at?
So tough.
It is tough. It's terrible that this is an awards podcast and I'm still on the moment trying to figure it out.
I think it's awesome though. I love this. Yeah, yeah.
Better.
Part of me thinks it's going to be split and that it's going to go to Three Billboards and the director is going to go to Del Toro, but I still like. And this is why I think I'm not excited about the Oscars, is because I think deep down I think Shape of Water is going to win. I think I agree with Kevin, like that we talked last week, that somewhere in my gut I think that there could be something that says Get Out's going to win. But I just think at the end of the day, like and like I think that's subconsciously why I'm not excited for this year's Oscars, is that I think deep down a movie that I don't care about is going to win Best Picture. So yeah, I think I've got to go on the record and saying, ultimately, I really do think that Shape of Water is probably going to win.
Wait, so Jake, if you're on TV doing your prediction, your Shape of Water is your pick.
I'm going to say Shape of Water, but I'm also going to tell, and I have to do this tomorrow, I'm also going to tell my audience that, I mean, unfortunately, granted, I know like you can't cover all bases, but like Shape of Water is probably going to win. But if you hear Get Out, don't be like shocked, because we do very much live, we live in a reality in which Get Out could win Best Picture.
I'm 99.9% sure I'm gonna be wrong, but I went with Get Out, and it's on.
Well, so then I would argue that that's not really what you think is gonna win, though.
But tomorrow morning on Fox News and Fox 5 and Fox Philadelphia, when the graphic comes up on screen, Kevin's will win is Get Out.
But now, okay, so do you really, really actually think it's going to win?
I have a feeling. And here's the thing. Honestly, the movie that's probably going to win is Three Billboards, if I were to make another choice. Three Billboards won the BAFTA, it won the SAG, it won the Golden Globe. That, to me, is adding up to that. My Get Out pick is more of putting like a good vibes into the universe, a hopeful pick. But I mean, call it a cop out. That's fine. I'm going to say on the air, I'm probably going to be wrong. But if you have your TV on mute and you are looking at the screen, they're going to see me picking Get Out.
I'm not trying to play devil's advocate, but I feel like if you proceed your prediction with, I'm probably going to be wrong, but then it's not really your prediction.
Okay. Well, all right. I'm predicting Get Out. And I'm going to say on the air that there are two other films that are current frontrunners as well. And I'm going to explain clearly on the air that Three Billboards has these wins. Shape of Water has these wins. Get Out has no wins. So I can give those facts without ever saying to my audience, I'm probably going to be wrong. But I mean, here's the thing. At the end of the day, I mean, no one, there's no science to this in my mind. I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I just kind of hope. And I think my hope kind of just rides on the moment we're in right now, when the voting took place from February 20th to the 27th, how well Black Panther did, the fact that Daniel Kaluuya's in that film, his face was everywhere. People were talking about that movie. This is a big year for representation and diversity. I'm not saying that those are reasons why Get Out will win. I think Get Out is clearly the better film of the three, no question. My hope is that some of these voters watched it more than once, because the second viewing really is the masterpiece mindset when it hits you finally. So I don't know. I mean, listen, call me crazy, but and I'm sure I'll be wrong, but I understand what you're saying, Jake, because it does sound like I'm kind of copping out from my prediction. But my kind
of I'm not trying to rag on you or bring you down, but it's just an interesting way to phrase it.
I know, but my Chirons tomorrow are going to say get out. So, I mean, anybody who's watching those shows is going to see that I've chosen Get Out as my prediction for Best Picture.
I'm clearly going to back up
my prediction and talk about why I feel that way, but I have to give the facts. I mean, clearly, if you're a betting person, you don't put money on Get Out, but it's just, I have a feeling about it. That's all.
So on Sunday, we will be tracking the Oscars on Cinema Blend. On Monday morning, these guys will be on their television shows. And then Monday night, we're going to get together and record a very special episode of Awards Blend, a wrap-up of the Oscars, talking about everything that happened during the telecast, when we were right, when we were wrong, and we might even look ahead to next year to get the earliest 2019 Best Picture predictions that anyone has ever seen. So start thinking about which film you think is going to win Best Picture. Does Black Panther get into the Best Picture race?
No.
It does not.
No. Listen, the movie's very good, but it's not. Right? It's not mind-blowingly amazing from a cinematic standpoint. Listen, I love Black Panther. I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
He hates it.
I give it a 4.5 out of 5. I just
in internet speak, that means you hated it.
I know. And Jake and I remember Jake and I were so worried or talked about this when Star Wars, when Last Jedi came out, and we both were very lukewarm on the film. I think you were too, Sean. If you say one negative thing about a movie like that, or you give a film like that a 3.5 out of 5, you hate it. Now it's like crazy. Like it's so black and white in regards to if you have any criticisms about a certain film, which is why I was interested to see how the reviews were for Black Panther. Like, that was a very anticipated movie. So how was it going to be graded? And to me, I graded it as a film, as the movie itself, not based on the hype around it, you know?
Wait. Before we close off, we're going to close off Best Picture. We're going to close off our predictions, but I forgot to ask this one. Does Roger Deakins win?
Yes.
Yes.
100%.
I'm going to say no.
Who's he losing to?
Don't do that. Don't put that out there in the universe, man.
I'm going to say no.
I don't say 100%. I would never say 100%.
Who's he lose to?
If I were, I think it's, yeah.
I mean,
talk about a career Oscar. I think this has got to be his career
Oscar. Clearly the winner should be Hoytema. I mean, there's no question.
Wrong,
I mean, that's not even a debate, but if we're talking about like, prediction.
My point just being that if he were going to win prior to this point, he would have won already.
You could have said that about Pacino. Like you would have, like think of all the awards Pacino was nominated for and lost.
Yeah, I think now it's like a running joke that they just
have. They done the cinematography awards yet? Or the ASCs or whatever those are?
Yeah,
called?
Yeah, Deakins won.
Oh, he's gonna win. Yeah, it's done. He's gonna win his first Oscar.
That is the category that I care about the most going into summer.
For a digital film, unfortunately, but yeah.
Okay,
they saved that for last.
In the past few weeks, we've been having a lot of fun breaking down people's filmographies. And we did Christopher Nolan and we did Paul Thomas Anderson because they were of the group of Best Director nominees that had a full body of work. Greta Gerwig had not. Jordan Peele had not. We did not get to Del Toro because we jumped to Spielberg. And as anyone who's listening to the podcast knows, the three of us are essentially just diehard Spielberg fans. And so we figured it would be fun to do Spielberg Blend. And Gabe, are you keeping track of what people said at home? So if you're not, do that now, because I'm curious what the general consensus of what everybody else is. Gabe's our producer.
But I would argue, I think I didn't do a great job of clarifying this on Twitter whenever I posed the question to my followers.
Right.
I saw a lot of people writing, well, like for nostalgic reasons or because of my childhood or this or that,
yeah,
movie X. And I would argue that nostalgia and childhood reasons can't go into picking. That can go into picking your favorite movie of Spielberg's, but that can't be a part of what you think is his best movie, his best perfectly crafted piece of cinema. Nostalgia and best don't go hand in hand. It doesn't work like that.
Correct.
So if you're on social media and you picked based off of an amazing experience you had when you were a child seeing E.T. go, you know, fly in front of the moon, then we phrase the question poorly because we're talking about his most finely crafted piece of celluloid.
Okay, so I want to go first because I want to talk about some of the criteria that I put a lot of thought into this. I don't know about you guys, but I obsessed over this for the past week and changed my mind a gazillion times.
Me too.
I have my Jurassic shirt. This is not my pick, but it was almost my pick. It was
that
really
was almost
close.
My pick too.
Yeah, it was really close.
Yeah.
I think that okay, so I'm gonna give you what my criteria were, and then we're gonna do something fun where we want the other guys to guess what they think the person's pick is. So we'll get to that in a second.
Okay. All
I right. think that your pick has to have an iconic John Williams soundtrack. It has okay. to have a theme song. So Agreed. For me, Private Ryan out. As good as it is, yeah. it's not there.
Yeah. Oh wow, that's interesting.
I think it has to have some science fiction to it. I think that's where Spielberg's heart goes all the time. I think that he loves telling sci-fi stories.
You picked Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, didn't you?
It's so good. It's such a good one. I think personally it has to qualify as a blockbuster. I think okay. that he does his historical films, but I think that the ones that Spielberg, that define Spielberg, are his tentpole blockbusters, whether they might be Raiders or whether it be Jurassic or whether it be something like that. And I think that it has to have an emotional connection. I think that Spielberg is a schmaltzy director who goes for the heartstrings more often than not. He doesn't always get there. Sometimes he tries a little bit too hard to get there. But I think that you have to find that the balance of all of those as the criteria for what would define the best Spielberg. So
okay,
I have my pick. I have my pick. You guys tell me what you think my pick is.
I think you picked E.T.
Kevin?
I'm going to go Raiders. No, you said sci-fi. So hold on. Let me change that. Because that actually,
oh,
it's
God,
funny.
We'll be here for half an
no,
hour.
No. Well, until Sean just said that sci-fi had to be part of his criteria, my choice was probably Raiders for him.
But I agree. I was going to pick Raiders until he said sci-fi.
I'm going to go with Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Jake is correct. I picked E.T. I think E.T. Okay, so in my opinion, Spielberg has six masterpieces. Six perfect, flawless masterpieces. Jaws, Close Encounters, Raiders, E.T., Schindler's List, and Jurassic Park. Those are the ones that, to me, they were the ones that were in the running. This is me personally. The guys will get to go next. You can't not play the E.T. theme song. Jake just sang it and not just instantly be brought back to that time. It balances so much of what Spielberg, like Spielberg has one foot in childhood at all time. And that pursuit of that golden age of when you're just this wide-eyed innocent child. He loves the Close Encounters does this. Minority Report to a certain extent. He loves stories that involve aliens and War of the Worlds took a darker turn towards that. He's always been fascinated in that kind of aspect. Sometimes it gets in the way when it's Crystal Skull. But one thing that Spielberg struggles with, and this is what knocked out a couple of movies for me, he struggles with endings. Some of his endings are really questionable. And E.T. is his perfect ending. I cannot watch the end of E.T. still, right now. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It is the most emotionally satisfying ending of a Spielberg film. So it just, to me, E.T. does everything that he tries to do, it does perfectly. And I don't think that it has, some of the critiques that I heard for the people that I shared what my pick was, they were like, but the bridge with the scientists, it starts to lose them when the scientists invade the home and they shut it down. But I think that's so important to get to that point. Because then I watched the scene today, fell down the rabbit hole, and Elliot saying goodbye to E.T., and then the flowers come to life again, and he opens it up, and E.T.'s talking to him, and they for them to escape. And it has that race to get him to his spaceship, has the bit of thrills that Spielberg likes to bring. It's just, it does everything that he does well. And so for all those reasons, E.T. is my pick.
What Sean's not telling us is that really what he's doing right now is he's doing an ad for Reese's Pieces. And this has all been paid for by Reese's Pieces. By the way, you know what Drew Barrymore told me?
You say Pieces? Reese's Pieces?
That's what I say.
Reese's Pieces?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Reese's
Pieces?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just didn't know, like, as a Southern man, I just didn't know. I was like, is that something, like, people in the North say? You didn't know?
Reese's Pieces.
I was genuinely curious.
Drew Barrymore told me that they reached out to Hershey's to be the candy in the film, and they turned it down. So that's Reese's hilarious. Pieces was like the second thing. But cool little Spielberg side note. I had the honor of going to the White House for the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and Spielberg was being honored that year. And he wasn't doing interviews, but I found my way over to the other side of the I think it was the East Room. I can't remember whatever room it was. I kind of grabbed him real quick because I think I shouted out Kaminsky's name or something. And he came over. And my question, I got three questions. And, you know, I asked him about the event, clearly. But then my only other question was, how did you film the famous moon shot in E.T. with the bike going across the moon? And he told me this really cool story that there was an actual moon photography that had a 1,000-millimeter lens that actually shot that moon for real. And then they add in that little animatronic figure of the kid going across. It's such a cool, it's amazing to me that they actually, that's a real moon shot. I mean, it's a real shot of a moon. You would think that it's like something they created in a studio or something like that. But I found that to be just mind blowing.
All right, Kevin, you're up.
Really? I'm next. You know what's funny is...
Don't give us your pick, because we get to choose what your pick is, but give us a little preface about how you got to it.
It's funny. Initially, when we all were discussing the idea of what our favorite Spielberg movie would be, and we put this into the atmosphere that we were actually going to be doing this pick, the movie that I've chosen now is the first film that came to my mind as my pick. Right. But there was actually a tweet that Sean sent out or either a tweet or a text that deferred me away from this pick because of what he said. And I actually still am finding myself questioning this because of what Sean said. I came to the pick primarily just because of what he was able to do. It's hard to talk about without giving all it right. away.
I know what it is. I know what it is. I just figured it out.
So do you want to do the guesses first and I'll get to why I loved it?
Yeah, I'll give a guess. Okay.
It's hard for me to tell you why I came to the conclusion without getting into specific details about why I did.
My guess is Jaws.
Yeah, that's what I was going to guess too.
Jaws.
Yeah.
100%.
And it's because I said his early movie like that. An early movie should not be his best. And that's really what knocked me off of Jaws. I can't believe that he as a filmmaker peaked that early is his third feature-length film.
Now, that is where I had problems with this pick, because you mentioned that in a tweet that it can't be Jaws because that's suggesting that Spielberg peaked at that age. Right. I wouldn't call it peaking. I would say that Jaws is the reason that he is the filmmaker he is today, mm-hmm. Which, in my opinion, I wouldn't call it his peaking film. I would call it the film that challenged him the most and made him the best filmmaker he could possibly be. To me, the reason why Jaws is the best movie he ever made is because of the odds that he overcame making that mm-hmm. film. I'm always blown away by what happened on that set, how the shark was breaking down. And this just kind of feeds into the brilliance of necessity being the mother of invention. And I wish more filmmakers wouldn't rely so much on CG and things like that and kind of figure things out for themselves and let themselves fail. He was almost fired from that production. The fact that that movie turned out the way it did, mm-hmm. considering what was going on behind those scenes, to me just it just proves that he is the greatest or one of the greatest filmmakers ever, if not the greatest, because of how the film turned out. And I know a lot of it was kind of, as I said, necessity is the mother of invention. They had to figure things out on the fly to make the scene work. They took a lot of the shark out of the movie because it looked terrible, which ended up being one of the most brilliant decisions ever, even though it might have been an accident or not purposely thought out in the beginning, because less shark meant that it was scarier for the viewer and you didn't see it as much. I can put Jaws on today and still watch it without... I don't ever think of it as cheesy or the effects looking bad, primarily because they took the shark out enough where when it does show up, it's menacing.
But do you know what's really terrible about Jaws?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, no, exactly.
There's
yeah.
not a single thing wrong with Jaws.
But the scene... I mean, the Quint death is just horrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that scene... I get, my stomach hurts when I watch that scene. Like, it is so brutal.
What about Hooper coming back? I don't like that Hooper comes back.
It doesn't bother me. I don't have a problem with that film. It's funny because...
It bothers me a little bit. Just a little bit.
Well, the word peak is interesting. I wouldn't use the word peak here. I think the reason why we got E.T.,
right,
Saving Private Ryan, Jurassic Park, some of the greatest movies ever made were because of the struggles that he had on Jaws. And I think the beauty of Jaws, there's two layers of Jaws to me. There's the Jaws where you watch it without knowing anything that happened behind the scenes. And then there's the Jaws you watch when you know what happened behind the scenes. Both viewings are perfect. Mm. And the knowing makes the viewing even better, but you don't have to know the baseball, inside baseball of what happened to enjoy Jaws. But knowing that, to me, is an extra layer of just brilliance.
You just love that it has a vertigo shot in it. That's what you love the most.
It is. Honestly, it's the best vertigo shot ever. It's better than anything Hitchcock ever did.
Better than the vertigo shot.
It's better than, yeah. Even though the vertigo shot wasn't even created for vertigo, but it was made famous in vertigo. But it was, I mean, listen, Hitchcock, I would say, is the greatest filmmaker to ever live. But vertigo is a masterpiece. But the use of the vertigo shot, the dolly zoom that Spielberg does with Roy Scheider in that scene is just, I mean, the anxiety that creates, it perfectly encapsulated what that moment would feel like for a person to watch someone get eaten alive by a shark. I mean, it's like, it is incredible. On top of that, the simplicity of John Williams' score, two notes, whatever. I mean, obviously there's more to it, but that famous... No, the famous Donna, whatever you want to say about that movie, everything about it came together. Whether or not that was planned, everything was planned, it clearly wasn't, because things happened because of all the problems that happened. So to me, the fact that under pressure that film was created the way it was is the best movie he ever made.
Under pressure.
All right, Jake, you're up.
If we're expressing qualifications by which we used to pick the perfect movie, I very much agree with the ones that Sean presented, and I have two more that I'm going to throw out there that are for me less qualifications and more tipping points. You know, if it were for me between three movies, I used these to ultimately make my decision. So going taking away the sci-fi element, because I don't think it necessarily needs to be sci-fi, because I think Spielberg has perfected a lot of different genres. But for me, the tipping points that made me pick a movie was, one, it created a cultural moment. Mm-hmm. And two, it made an emotion timeless. And so I'll let you guys pick based off of that.
Hold on. It made an emotion timeless, and it created a cultural moment. Now, can cultural... So for example, Jaws was the first blockbuster of all time. A lot of people would argue that it was the first. You've heard that before, right? It's like the first.
Yeah.
All right. So was that considered a cultural moment?
I would say so. Yeah.
Okay. And then the second thing was it's meant to cause emotional.
He disagrees with sci-fi.
Yeah, I disagree with sci-fi. And
it's not sci-fi.
Yeah, it's and it makes a certain emotion timeless.
Is it Warhorse?
And that's hard to explain without telling you what I mean by that.
Tintin. Is it Tintin?
It's not Tintin.
Hold on a second. I actually genuinely want to figure this out before Jake reveals it. Okay, so it's not sci-fi. It was a cultural moment, and it has a timelessly emotional element to it. Jake,
that last one is hard to explain without telling you what I mean.
Yeah,
No. Let's just get to him. He can explain it after. Okay. Come on, just guess.
Right. My pick is
Wait, we got to guess.
Oh,
you picked Jaws 2?
Sorry, I picked Jaws 2.
I was going to guess Private Ryan anyway. I was going to guess Private Ryan.
Because I do agree with you that if Spielberg and John Williams do go hand in hand. But my reasons are less Kevin's reasons, because I don't like to say that it's his best movie, because I don't want to dilute what he did. I don't like the idea of saying, well, it's a great movie because of like what he stumbled upon. But I like this idea that, I mean, not just the fact that he created what is known as the modern summer blockbuster, but a cultural movement in the sense that hundreds of thousands of sharks were killed that summer because people went out and tried to kill sharks out of fear of what they saw in that movie. People that that had mom and pop shops on beaches along the coast in America lost their businesses because people weren't going to the beaches. Because I mean, we're talking about a massive nationwide cultural movement that doesn't really happen in movies anymore. Like, yeah, right. Like we as a culture like go to movies in waves. I mean, Black Panther is an amazing example of that. But we're talking about people's lives that are changed. Like people, like when Psycho came out and people didn't take shower. We're talking about, you know, there's a reason that movies today try to say like does for blank what. What Jaws does for beaches. You know, like there's, I mean, we're talking about an entire nation stopped doing something because of the power of this movie. And what I meant by free, by making an emotion timeless, for me personally, comedy and fear are the two cinematic emotions that are consistently changing. What's funny and scary today is different than what's funny and scary 20, 30 years ago, and probably is different than what will be funny and or scary 30 years from now. Drama tends to be drama. What scares people tends to be different. We're now, what, past 40 years of Jaws, and to me, that movie is still scary. Mm-hmm. I appreciate something like Halloween, but I don't get scared when I watch that movie, and you know, even something as recent as like a Saw, like I never got scared watching a movie like that. But to me, the elements of what make Jaws perfect is that it is an emotion that is continuously evolving, but in this particular movie it does not evolve. Like also, fear is there. It will always
blends,
be there.
It blends in a way when Spielberg's working at his best, he weaves humor into genres that it doesn't have to. Like whenever people are trying to force humor into a situation, if you're doing
Last
it
Jedi.
The wrong way, yeah, if you're doing it the wrong way, you can hear the joke land on the floor, right?
Yeah.
And everyone's just like, oh. But like Raiders, the reason why Raiders is as great as it is, and frickin' Raiders should be in this conversation, and none of us brought it up.
I'm a Raiders Crusade guy. I'm more of a Crusade guy.
Nah,
I am.
Those movies are funny. They're funny movies. Yeah. You can study them as comedies. And, totally. And there's so many things that Spielberg does in them. I'll go back to E.T. or Jurassic. Like he finds a way to cast somebody, whether it's Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park or Richard Dreyfuss in Jaws, who just bring humor to the situation, and it's not forced. It's not here's
all
the funny
die.
Guy, you know, here's the comedian that we cast.
It almost
because...
makes you wonder, like whenever they deliver a funny line, if it's a good funny line, it almost makes you wonder, was that scripted? Did they just ad-lib in that moment? Like some of like the great lines were like, I wonder if there is a story behind that line, but like, no, like it's just like, it's perfectly worth. You shouldn't know that a funny line was in the script.
I always find that one of the telltale signs of a great film is when you watch it, even though you know the ending, you hope for something different every time you watch it. Like, every time I watch Terminator 2, I somehow hope Arnold does not go into the pit and do the thumbs up. And like I'm like, in my mind, I genuinely...
I don't know why you cry.
But I know, I genuinely start thinking to myself... Could this change? Even though I'm watching a disc that's been made, the movie's been out for years. But going back to Quint's death, I mean, oh my God. That Jake talks about terror and the timelessness of that fear in the movie. But that death scene might, in my opinion, is probably the most horrific scene I've ever seen in a movie. Because
you see the pain on his face, like not just the blood. Yeah. You know when the blood spurts from his mouth, but you see how much pain he is enduring in that moment.
I literally feel the teeth going into my stomach when I watch that scene. It is, and to me, by the way, that film was PG. By the way, and I know there was no PG-13. At the time, and the PG-13 rating was...
parent guidance was suggested.
Oh, my God. I mean, I think Jaws would get an R rating today, no question.
Like, I want to very quickly just talk about something that Spielberg does better than anybody else, and this is what influenced a lot of these decisions, too. Creature design. I mean, the shark being so terrifying in Jaws. Yeah. I mentioned E.T. He doesn't hide the alien, and that alien freaking works.
Yeah.
And then the T-Rexes in Jurassic Park, there's
Winston,
a reason
baby.
Why those are... They're iconic, right? And this is what he was able to do to this industry.
There's a reason why Jurassic World doesn't look as good as Jurassic Park is because the filmmaker was like, oh, we'll just do everything CG. We'll do one animatronic dinosaur with the big dinosaur that Chris Pratt walks up to and is dying on the ground, whatever. But Spielberg used CG when he absolutely had to use it. Right.
He was also smart and put a lot of CG scenes in Rain, and Rain tends to make CG look better.
Better. I mean, I will say, when you put on Jurassic Park now, it looks phenomenal. But when they first get there, it does look a bit CG, clearly. Yeah, I mean, their effects are from night. But I mean, I'm not judging it, because Stan Winston built this, like, thousands of pound T-Rex that they were operating. I mean, some of it's CG, clearly, but it looks... To me, it's the blend. If you blend the CG and the practical in such a way where you can't figure out which one's which, the way you have to use CG. I interviewed Spielberg for the BFG, and I remember asking him.
The BFG?
I'm name dropping.
This comes from an inside joke in which we've all been joking that the other person was going to pick BFG, is there? to your point also, I mean, like, we were talking about the difference between favorite and best. My favorite Spielberg movie is Jurassic Park. Mm. If we were doing, like, talking about, like, tickling the nostalgia bone and the movie that is probably my childhood and one of the movies that made me truly realize that I loved movies more than most people did, that movie is Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. My favorite might be E.T. or Jurassic Park. But one thing I was saying was I asked Spielberg if he could redirect Jaws again today, would he use a CGI shark? And he said yes. And I found that that's what I have it on video.
What?
Then, I will say, then he backtracked, and then he did say, though, the reason why that film ended up being as good as it was is because of the problems that we had. So he kind of, at first he was like, yeah. Ooh. And then he was like, you know what? Actually,
that's like Crystal Skull Spielberg speaking.
Yeah,
I gotta say, like, that actually worries me about Spielberg moving forward, that he now has that mentality of, CGI.
People are knocking Ready Player One because the amount of CGI in the trailers.
Well, first of all, how else it's a virtual world. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, that.
What worries me is that I just worry about how that movie's gonna age.
Which one?
Ready Player One.
Well, Ready Player One.
I agree with you. Oasis has to be digital. CG by nature of what it is. But I just worry about what that movie is going to look like in 20 years.
Okay.
That's my most anticipated movie of the year.
No, I know. All right, fan results for everybody who played along with Spielberg Blend. We cannot thank you guys enough. Social reaction on this one was amazing. So, quick recap. I picked E.T. The other boys picked Jaws. I can't fault them. I mean, it's an incredible film. Fan results pretty much went with Jaws, Raiders, Schindler's List. I find it interesting that none of us picked either of his historical films, whether it be Schindler's List, or I thought maybe Lincoln might get some picks. Yeah. Oh, Private Ryan might get some picks,
too. I have never fully watched Schindler's List.
You've never fully watched Schindler's List?
I couldn't get through it.
All right, wait. If we're confessing this, then I can tell you something that I told the boys also. I've never seen Hook. Never seen Hook.
Now that's crazy. Hook's amazing. But I will say,
Bang Right, Peter!
Is there a Spielberg movie you haven't seen that's pretty famous, Jake?
Nothing that comes to mind. I've never seen 1941. But I wouldn't call that like a, oh my god, you have to see it Spielberg movie. And the reason I don't think I have missed anything big is because I not too long ago rewatched the Spielberg HBO documentary, which if you haven't seen, is incredible. Three hours, great. It just flies by. But there was nothing major that was touched on in there that I don't think I've seen.
I had a weird experience with Schindler's List because I'm trying to remember the year it came out. Was it 98? What year was Schindler's List?
Schindler's List was 93.
93. Okay, 93. So I was nine.
Yeah, because it was the same year as Jurassic Park. Same year. Put out Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year.
Right. And so I was nine when Schindler's List came out, so I wasn't able to see it, even though it was historical. And then when I finally got to the age to watch it, I tried watching it. And I don't think it has anything to do with this, but I come from a Jewish background. My parents are Jewish. My mom's Jewish. My grandparents are Jewish. It was just very hard to watch. And I remember in the mindset that I was in at the time, I couldn't watch. It was very hard to watch. And every time I tried to revisit it back in college, I just wasn't in the right mindset. I've never had the urge to sit down and go, you know what? I really want to watch Schindler's List.
To be fair, there is no right mindset for that movie. If you're going to wait for that time where the urge strikes you to watch Schindler's List, it's never, it's like you, it's, And I mean this in the best way possible. You have to make yourself watch Schindler's List.
And rewatchability was a huge factor that I what I thought about Agreed. When making my pick.
And I think that's why I veered away from. So I'm not trying to say that Jaws is more important than Schindler's List, because we're talking about a summer blockbuster versus a movie that has genuine significance. But there's no part of me. I think talking about factors, the ability to be able to come across it on TV and stop what you're doing and finish it no matter where it's at. Is a big factor in that, and by no means does Schindler's List. I don't mean that as a knock on Schindler's List. Yeah. I just if I see it on TV, I'm not going to stop it. And be like, oh, what part is it? Is it the part with the girl with the red dress? Like I just don't have that feeling.
I do plan on watching it, and I am going to. I think I'm at a point now where I'm ready to watch it. It wasn't. I don't know. It's one of those things. You're home on a Saturday and you have nothing to do. You don't pop on Schindler's List.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I pop on Face Off or something like that. Or, you know, Con Air or something ridiculously over the top and stupid. But
date night. You're going to cook dinner and throw on Schindler's List.
I mean, you can't. It's just real. Jake makes a great point. You kind of have to force yourself to watch it. And every time I've sat down to watch it, it just has never been the right time. So I don't know.
I often find that to make your like if you can find someone else that's never seen it that wants to see it, that's always a good excuse to sort of be like, well, you've never seen it. Like, you know, I know with I think my fiance Ren, I don't think has ever seen Schindler's List. And so I'm sure within the coming years we'll sit down and watch it because she knows that it's one of those movies that she needs to see. And so through her, I'll watch it again. Not if I were sitting home alone, by no means would I ever throw it on the Blu-ray player, but because I want her to see it, I think I'll watch it again.
All right. We have a couple of days until the Oscars. The Academy Awards are on Sunday.
Yeah.
We will have a wrap-up show on Monday evening.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be available Monday night. We'll have the audio available for people to download, so we're going to break down everything that happens on Sunday. You can find us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, and at Sean_O'Connell. We would love for you to head on over to iTunes and drop us a link and a review if you could. We have 17 ratings now. And so far, they're all 5 stars. Someone's gonna dive bomb us with a 1. I know it. Just for probably someone that we know.
Just
friends
to
of ours.
Be that guy.
Please check us out on all your podcast apps of choice, including Spotify. Now, at this point, you can subscribe to us on Spotify. I teased that we're going to have a rebrand. I think we're going to talk about that briefly at the end of the next episode, but you will start to see something on our social channels about a new direction for the podcast. I'm very excited about what we're planning on doing with the show, but it'll still be the three of us, and we're still going to be talking about all things that are really important to cinema. So we will see you guys back here on Monday, where we wrap up the Oscars. Guys, anything to say on your way out the door?
This is a lot of fun.
It makes me happy that Jake chose Jaws. And it's funny because Jake and I have a very big connection to Jaws, just as friends in general. Over the years, when we've interviewed Spielberg, it's just become a joke in our group. But I mean,
you
genuinely,
should tell that joke, Kevin. What's
no,
that joke? Tell
we're
that
not
joke.
Telling that joke at all.
You sure, I want to hear that one.
I'm unaware of what joke you speak of.
No, but Jake and I literally were in a hotel room in New York City, getting ready to interview Spielberg for Tintin. I just interviewed Spielberg a week prior for War Horse, and it was a Friday night in New York.
He's telling
and he,
the joke. He's
gonna no, no, he was filming. Yeah. He was filming Lincoln. And he was coming up from Richmond to do interviews for Tintin. And Jake and I just sat in a room all night and worked on questions. We pretended like we were Spielberg and asked each other questions. And then we had this Jaws joke that kind of came out of left field.
That's one way to put it.
It's an R-rated joke, to say the least, that I don't think our mothers would appreciate us.
Well, and very soon we will be reviewing a Spielberg film on this podcast when we talk Ready Player One.
Yeah,
so that's coming
will.
Up very soon.
I cannot wait. I keep seeing people hating on it already. They haven't even seen it. I'm like, guys.
No, it's too soon.
It's
going to
be amazing.
All right, we'll be back next week. We'll see you Monday after the Academy Awards. Follow us on social media. We will be live tweeting the show probably, and we'll talk to you next Monday. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to the live show. If you're listening to us on the audio podcast, we appreciate you as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Dunkirk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.